Welcome, our fellow lovers of love, and thank you for joining us on yet another excursion through the stream of consciousness down the river of tranquility to fill the lake of life with love.
Welcome back. Welcome back, our fellow lovers of love. How are you doing this evening? I'm Jazz. That's Lovey over there trying to resist the coughing fit she's in the middle of.
Well, I quit smoking cigarettes and cigars. So now I'm coughing up all this stuff.
So this, children, is why you don't start smoking.
Yeah. I'm telling all the family kids, by the way, don't start smoking. It's really hard. Nothing good in it for you.
So there's our anti-smoking campaign for the day. As we start with love yourself, don't start that, which I can't throw stones because I went through mine. The same process. Okay, but in this week, we're going to cover some life, parenting, relationships, and work questions as normal. And for those of you who stick around, you might get some more intimate explorations.
Yes.
So for those of you on KUBU 96.5 FM, you're going to have to go find us at latenightlove.us. And for the rest of you, you can find us at thatlatenightlove.us. You can also send your letters, questions, and comments to love@latenightlove.us, and we will answer them as best we can. All right. So, you know, I forgot to have that. I had one, a philosophical question that we kind of start the show with, and then I forgot to put it on the list. I forgot what it was. What? Oh, I have fabric softener in my sleeve. How fun.
I thought it was a Kleenex tucked in your thing like an old lady.
No, it's fabric softener. The funny thing is I've been wearing this shirt all day.
Fabric softener sheet.
That didn't know. That tells you how oblivious I am to things going on. So there it is. How's that we start? Obliviousness in life and relationships. We'll just kind of wing one. We'll wing a philosophical.
Okay.
Wing a philosophical. Thanks. I managed to go all day with a fabric softener up my sleeve without having the slightest clue. Fabric softener sheet, a dryer sheet.
You couldn't feel it?
No.
It wasn't irritated?
No. It was quite soft, actually.
Because usually when you become oblivious to something, it makes itself known as an irritation.
Yes, but it was clearly wasn't irritating me because I didn't. And who knows where it started and worked its way down to where you could see it, you know, but I was completely oblivious all day. I've literally been wearing this shirt since 9:30 this morning.
You went to work.
Yeah. The dryer sheet up my sleeve. All right. Anyway, we've got some life questions, and we're just going to go ahead and jump in. Because this first one's actually probably a pretty good theoretical start.
Okay. All right,
what do you got?
How do I tell my parents that I'm a Therian? I know that a lot of people say you shouldn't, but I feel horrible keeping it a secret. How can I tell them subtly? Well, that's not really a subtle topic, darling.
Well, yeah, there's no way to tell them subtly. And first, for those of you there who don't know, those are people who don't feel human, don't feel like they're human. You know, maybe you could talk to the people who feel like they're animals, or they just feel like they're so different. Maybe they're an alien or something, whatever it is. They don't feel human. And the thing is, you can't tell. There's no way to subtly tell them something like this. It's just not possible.
No.
But the reality is the reason people tell you not to tell people is they're going to rightfully say, okay, something is wrong, because the reality is you are human and there's nothing you can actually do about that. And you're going to have to find some way eventually to come to terms with that. I understand how you feel. I am sympathetic even to the difficulties that you go through, that you have, you know, kind of maintaining a normal life in the modern world. But the reality is, this is something you need to work on not feeling. You need to figure out why you don't feel human and work on accepting yourself for who you are. You can't change reality. You are a free human being. You can live and believe how you wish. Doesn't mean it's healthy for you. And there's going to come a point where you're going to have to accept reality. Maybe you can't do it right now and no one should push you to it, but you should be working towards that goal in the long term. And, you know, and the problem is your parents are going to be shocked. And so they're going to have a conversation, you know, it's coming. Right. They know they're going to try to get you to force reality, and they're probably going to do it in a way that is too forceful for you right now. I don't really disagree with that, but you need to work to a point where you can, because keeping these kinds of secrets from the people who love you doesn't work out long term. They're the ones who can help you when it comes to the time, and you don't want to shock them at that point. So, and my guess is they probably know something is different. They've raised you your whole life. They know. You just don't know what to do about it. So my suggestion is to pick the one who will have the least bad reaction and start there.
That's good advice.
So, but you don't have to do it right away. You can take your time. Because the reason you're afraid of doing this is because you know reality's coming.
Yeah.
And so that's why you don't do it. That's why the people are telling you not to do it. It's because then you have to face this reality. And you're a free human being. You're allowed to be, exist, who and how you are. It just doesn't mean it's healthy for you. Okay, what's next, Lubby?
Why is the dark web not banned, blocked, and illegal?
Well, because it by itself, is there's nothing, just like anything else. It's like printing books. Why is printing books not banned, blocked, or illegal? A book can have all kinds of bad ideas in it. Bad knowledge. You know, there's lots of things that you can ban, block, and make illegal. It doesn't solve the problem. The dark web, it's not, the dark web is just a media-created phrase to make you afraid of something that is simply more free and less trackable. Therefore, that's where more of the underworld hangs out. But it's also where, let's so say, people in authoritarian regimes seek help and assistance from the outside world. Ooh. It's how NGOs can operate in areas where they're not supposed to operate. And yes, there are things that can go on the dark web that we as society probably wouldn't like. But those things are going to go on anyway, whether there's the dark web or not. And quite frankly, the dark web is more trackable than you think. And it's probably better to let some of these things exist so you can pick off the worst of them rather than they hide completely underground and you can't trace them. So, you know, there's that two sides of hacker world, you know, there's the white hat hackers and then there's the other hackers and then there's the underworld. Just don't go there and don't worry about it is my suggestion for the dark web. Now, if you are one of those who, you know, tries to serve people in areas that are difficult to communicate with the outside world freely, that's actually the biggest use for the dark web. Just no one talks about it because no one talks about it. So, I mean, just think of some of the places in the world that have internet that would like information not to leave it. Think of places like Doctors Without Borders. How do they communicate in some of these places in the world securely? So, let's think about it. Okay.
When buying gas at a self-service station, why do people insist on pulling a paper receipt? What do they do with them?
Well, it depends. Some people, you know, they keep track of their credit card things and make sure the transaction was correct. And you can't really do that without a receipt. I know you can get the receipt emailed to you and whatnot, but some people like the paper receipt. It's just preference. Others submit them as business expense receipts for taxes, as a business write-off. There's 100 reasons to pull a receipt, right? Maybe you're getting the code so you can go to the washing, the car wash. There's one of the reasons to get a receipt.
Yeah.
But realistically, it's for accounting purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you do the receipt. You know, maybe they have to submit it for a reimbursement. You know, who knows? There's lots of reasons. Okay. Stop. Actually, the biggest thing is stop paying attention to what other people are doing. Just don't worry about it. That's probably the best, better lesson to be. What are you doing caring? What if other people pull receipts or not?
It's a mystery.
No, it's not a mystery. That's the thing.
Well, to me, that's how I treat these things that are none of my business. It's a mystery.
Yeah, but it's none of your business, so it's not a mystery. It's none of your business.
It is. It's none of my business. So, yeah. But I'm curious. So it's a mystery. It has to remain in life, one of those mysteries of life.
Curiosity killed the cat. Just pointing this out. Okay. What's this next one?
My daughter was involuntarily committed to rehab. Who is supposed to control her finances and pay her bills?
Probably you. And if she won't give you the right to do it voluntarily, you may have to go to a judge and ask for a power of attorney. So these things can get taken care of properly. That's generally how it works.
And you're trying to help her put together the life that she's going to have, that she's going to have a life and not have to start over from square one with nothing.
Yeah, because there's no one else to do it except those who care for her.
And, yes.
And so those who care for her have to pick up the slack. Parenting never ends, sadly. And so, you know, some of her finances are, you get control and you close a lot of her expenses, right? She doesn't need a lot of them right now. So you can close most of them. You can try and save her money, but you're going to have to do it. And if she's not going to give you access to her accounts and to the ability to take care of these things willingly, you're going to have to go and get it done. Or it doesn't get done. It's the other option.
Yeah, and she comes out of rehab to a mess.
Well, you know. My guess is she went into rehab in a mess. So.
Well, yeah.
And there is some, not suggesting this, but there is some value in having to clean up your own mess. You have to accept the complete mess you made.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. But you can keep it from being a disaster rather than a mess to clean up.
Yeah.
You're still going to have a mess to clean up regardless, but there is some value in having to be responsible for the entire, you know, and you never know. Is this a month? Is this going to be 6 months? Those are different strategies to get through them. So anyway, we wish you the best of luck. It's just sad. Okay, what's next?
We're going to move on to parenting.
All right.
Is Disney World worth it? Okay, this is a dad of teenagers who are begging to go to Disney World. They want it so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And he is just not a Disney fan.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of money.
Yes. And Disney World is getting more and more expensive. The better value is actually Disneyland in California. If you actually wanted to have a Disney experience, you can get the better value in Disneyland, Disney World. So there's an option if you wanted to save some money. But I get where he's coming from on the Disney thing, because from an economic perspective, no, it's not. But as a once in a lifetime experience, that's a difficult thing to judge. I can't judge that. I personally wouldn't find it that big of a deal, but others do. And I can't judge the value of their experiences. So, you know,
it would be making their dream come true.
Yeah. So, but my advice,
and you get to be the good guy and you get to do that.
Yeah. Well, try Disneyland. See if that one flies. You can save some money there. Because Disney World is just ridiculous.
I'm not saying you can't compromise, but you know.
Go in the off season. Well, there isn't really one in Disney World, that's the problem. But yeah, try Disneyland would be my suggestion. See if that flies. But I don't know. There comes a point where it's not economically feasible, right? And you don't want to go into, you know, big debt over a trip to Disneyland when you can go to someplace closer and cheaper and have a similar experience. Yeah, it won't be a Disney experience, but some of those other parks are pretty good. So the question is the emotional benefit they get from it worth the cost? Because from a strict economic calculation, there's no, it's not. But trips to Disneyland aren't about economics, except for Disneyland, except for Disney. So for you, it's about emotions and experiences and that kind of thing. So you're going to have to decide how much your children getting the trip of a lifetime is worth it for you, to you. That's it. It's a different calculation than the monetary value. How much is their happiness worth? And will they actually be happy? Okay, so what's next?
How to discipline and teach a 13-year-old the value of money. $485 charged to PlayStation wallet.
Well, that's a lot of work at $10 an hour to put in. Your boy's going to be doing a lot of yard work for you, isn't he? That's the generic solution for boys. Get them out there and doing yard work, that kind of thing. Send them over to mow the old lady's lawn across the street. Don't let them charge anybody. Yeah, he's just going to have to learn. And you pay him about 10 bucks an hour. It's a lot of hours. Right? It just is. That's how he's going to learn. And yeah, and he don't get to play those PlayStations until he pays that off. There's the other one.
Yeah.
He doesn't get them until he's actually bought them. And some of those you may be able to return, but you're still going to have to. Traditionally, the best way to get boys to learn these kind of lessons is to work it off. It's not even the value of money. That's not the value of money that you're trying to teach. It's that he can't just arbitrarily make these decisions.
It's not his money.
It's not the value of the money. It's the fact that he charged money that wasn't his to use. It's not the value of a dollar. It's not relevant. And see if you can send some of those back. Oftentimes, those companies are more forgiving than they tend to be. To outwardly promote. Okay.
Soon to be parent here. Why does everyone say no visitors for a couple months?
Because the baby's immune system is still developing. Parents are exhausted. And the last thing they want to do is think about, you know, hosting and entertaining you.
So yeah.
Unless you're a best friend and coming to actually help, you don't. If you want to stop by, you bring diapers, food, and you leave. That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You bring diapers, food, and you go. So, yes, if you must come by and see, and you stay no longer than 15 minutes, you get out of there. Doesn't care what they say. You say, I don't want to bother you guys. Now, they might really, really want you to stay because they have that, especially if it's, I don't know, about 6 weeks, Mark, they might be wanting some human interaction, some adult human interaction. So there does come that point. But judge it. Be prepared to go in there expecting to leave after 15 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah. That would be my suggestion. Because, yeah, they're exhausted. They're not sleeping. The last thing they want to do. So when you go, bring gifts of food and diapers. That's my suggestion.
Milk. Yeah.
Well, brand new parent, so the milk isn't the issue. Bring food.
Well, you bring food.
Yeah, you don't need to bring milk. They're not a toddler. They're not drinking milk yet.
I appreciated milk.
I don't know. I've never known pregnant. I mean.
But I drink a lot of milk.
Yeah. So anyway. All right. So what's next?
In-laws gave my 8 and 10-year-old champagne when I wasn't around. I'm sober. Thoughts?
Well, most likely those 8 and 10-year-olds wouldn't like it. They take a sip. That's pretty traditional to be given a sip of champagne or something on a special occasion. Yeah, let them taste a bit of it because they don't like it. So
no, they don't.
So I wouldn't worry so much about it. My guess is they didn't give them a glass of champagne and say, here, drink it. The kids were bugging them for a taste. Yeah, here you go. Lock yourself out. You ain't going to like it. I don't get them to stop asking. That's how traditionally you get kids to stop asking for taste of champagne is to give them a taste of champagne. They don't like it. All right.
How to address a 7-year-old that does not stop talking?
You don't. You just learn to not pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you don't want them to start harnessing their thoughts. You want them to freely express themselves. So you're just
going to. Seven. Sorry.
Yeah. You're just going to have to.
That's typical.
You're just going to have to get used to doing the man thing and not really paying attention. Sure. Okay. Well, don't say okay to a 7-year-old without just make them ask again. Before you say okay, you're not paying attention.
Listen for questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, is what you're doing.
Listen for questions and then make them repeat the question so you know you're answering what question you're actually answering. But yeah, for the most of it, it's just their thoughts coming out through their mouth. And in a sense, it's good practice for speech. You don't want them to develop an issue with expressing themselves.
Right.
Yeah, deal with it is the issue, is how to address it. Okay, what's next?
Don't tell me straight. Does a cry it out method work? It never worked for my babies. They would get upset to the point to where they'd throw up. Yeah.
Well, at what age? There's different age and circumstances. It's my kids I always let them cry it out for a couple minutes, something that I would feel appropriate for whatever their emotions they were feeling. All right, that's enough. Come on, let's go. You let them express themselves, but there comes a point where they're letting it become bigger in their own head than it really is. And so you put the foot down where that line is. Where that line is different on every occasion. You're not always going to get it right, but you've got to teach them to get over things. Otherwise, you know, they learn how to become a victim really easily. It's human nature. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to teach them, yeah, life is difficult sometimes. It's how it is. Feel your emotion, then pick yourself back up and move on because that's the way it's going to be. And so eventually they're going to have to learn that, and it really starts younger than you think. I'm not saying it starts at an infant age, but you know, it starts younger than you think. Okay, what's next?
What's a go-to meal that you make for your kids way too often?
Chicken nuggets.
macaroni and cheese.
Macaroni and cheese chicken nuggets, because the reason these are the staples that you go to too often is because A, kids like them. B, they're cheap and easy. Well, B, they're cheap, and C, they're easy.
Yeah.
So you add those three things together, and that's how they end up becoming the staple go-to.
And then, of course, spaghetti.
Yeah, but that's just making something for your family way too often.
Yeah.
We all get tired of eating too much spaghetti. Let's see. What's the other thing? Cereal for breakfast. You end up making way too much cereal for breakfast, again, simply because it's relatively cheap, fast, simple, easy.
Easy.
And, you know, in the mornings, the last thing you want to do is anything complicated. Everybody's in a rush these days because school starts too dang early. And so, you know, that's what kind of the cause of that is, or a fundamental cause of it. But see, what else? We got this far too easy. You know, back now you're talking to someone who was raised on TV dinners. So.
Well, yeah. Well, my mom, she would make big pots of vegetable soups. And sometimes she'd put macaroni in it for something special. My mother didn't cook very much. And we would eat off of that for like a week. And you were eating it until it was gone.
Yes. See, my mother was working and going to school. So we got mostly TV dinners is what I remember. So having someone cook a meal was a treat. We had things like Shana goulash, which is simply tuna casserole, but we wouldn't eat tuna casserole. So, so we got things like Shana goulash and oh God, what was the other one? And what we did was just tuna casserole, and I just put it on toast. So anyway, now my kids, what we made a lot for my kids when they got a little older was we make homemade hamburger helper. You get a lot of whatchamacallit, ground beef. You buy a couple boxes. Well, with all my kids, it was 3 boxes of macaroni and cheese. And some potatoes. You chop up the potatoes to, you know, small size chunks. You fry those things in a with some special sauces and, so, I mean, seasonings. Same thing with the meat. Being careful not to over season it with the with the seasoning, because then it'd be way too salty. And then you kind of mix it all together, and you have homemade hamburger helper in a big, huge pot of it, and it would last 2 days because of all the boys. It's a good heart attack meal right there. You give that, and the first night you get some bread with it, and there you go. And we made that a lot. The other thing was lemon chicken, but once I got the lemon butter chicken, but once I had the concussion, I forgot how to cook it, or I can't taste it right, so I can't make it right. So anyway, one of the two. All right, so it's what it is. All right, what's next?
Well, we're going to move on to relationships.
All right.
Found out wife cheated on me while we were dating. How to move on?
Well,
you're married now.
Well, A, yeah, you're going to have to move on. You're just going to have to find a way to move on. And B, what stage of dating was it? Were you guys actually, you know, a couple yet? Or were you still not yet at that point? It really kind of depends. It may be emotionally hurtful, but, you know, if you weren't officially a couple yet, then, you know, realistically, she was free to do that. But so, you know, may feel like cheating, but really was it? Is a question. But two, yeah, the question is, if you still fundamentally trust her, then you're just going to have to move on. And there's no other way to do it than to accept the fact that you're going to have to, and over time you will. Sadly. And my fellow men out there, you know what I'm talking about. Men know how to do this. Most of us know how to do it. You just decide that you're going to move on from it, and you just move on from it. Doesn't mean it does it overnight, but over the course of a few months, you just move over, move on from it. It'll irritate you every now and again, but you've moved on from it. It won't work. It won't stick around. Unless, of course, something happens, major happens, and then you're going to feel like an idiot. But that's, you're going to feel like an idiot anyway, so it's worth the risk, I suppose. My guess is, in her mind, she wasn't probably...
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Dating. He doesn't say they were a couple yet. They were dating.
Yeah, and, you know, people can date more than one person at a time unless...
They really can.
You know, we may not like it, but they're allowed. Now, maybe she should have been more open with you, but maybe you weren't that far on your relationship for her to be that open yet. Maybe you were on your first couple dates and you just weren't that far along. Or the other thing to think about is she picked you.
Yeah, ultimately. She did. I mean, come on now.
So, but I do get his point. I do. It would hurt even under that circumstance, even under the best circumstance. It would still be emotionally painful. So I get his initial, I get his feeling.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay.
Am I overreacting that my husband receives messages from the girl he cheated on me with previously? Dude, he's doing what?
Yeah, probably not. But depends upon what you're overreact. What you mean by overreacting. Are you throwing things and punching holes in the walls and keying cars? Or are you just rightfully upset that...
They should have no contact. It should be done.
Yeah. But essentially. And so, yeah. So really, but the overreacting part really kind of depends. Are you breaking things and whatnot? Or are you just saying, you know, I'm done and it's time to end the relationship? That second part is not overreacting, but the first one is, you know, you don't want to become something you're not going to like later on. Dealing with these kind of things with dignity is always better than not. For your own sake, not for anybody else's. Let's be clear about that. Okay.
How to handle my girlfriend telling me she thinks I'm unmanly and submissive? No, she's 26. She should know better. That's not cool.
That's quite frankly very close to abusive, if not.
It really is, yeah.
And depending upon the rest of the relationship. And there's another question. Was this during like a fight where they just kind of get to the point where you're just saying things to try and hurt the other person because you don't have any other... anything else to do because you've kind of exhausted the actual fight. And so you just kind of start to hurl insults. You know how those get, especially in your 20s.
Haven't done that.
We're in our 20s. They're in their 20s. 26, oh. 28.
Oh.
Yeah. We were past.
I don't remember ever doing that.
Not with us. No. When you're in your 20s, go back and think about in your 20s.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I rest my case. So people in their 20s, they haven't learned yet that you don't hurl insults and whatnot in during these kind of relationships. You are allowed to walk away. You're allowed to end the fight when it becomes circular and come back later and deal with it. It's likely the best way. Or is she telling you how she actually feels about you and she's just afraid to move on from the relationship for whatever reason? Or she's an abusive personality and she's just getting her needs met by abusing you. Those are the options. And you're going to have to decide which one is true and deal with it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. My hope is it's just you're young and it happens during an argument and you just haven't learned yet to not hurl insults back and forth because it ruins relationships and even worse, it degrades you as a human being when you do that.
Because at 26, she should have a little more. She should have let go of that Disney idea of, you know, that Prince Charming or whatever.
Well, the question is, if she doesn't like that, why is she with him?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he changed. So what's different? So that's kind of, I don't know. She's either my, if you wanted to tell me to flip a coin, she's either abusive or immature. And at some point, it's the difference is irrelevant. Right? She's the only way she might mature is by, you know, being forced to move on. And if it's the other thing, you don't want to be with her anyway. So, but I try to be positive on these things and hope that this is a learning experience and y'all can actually mature and she can learn to drop this kind of thing.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
Yeah, not the most likely thing to happen. Okay, what's next?
Is it weird that I don't want to visit my girlfriend's mom's house anymore for celebrations, gatherings? Because they always end up having to wash dishes, hand wash dishes for 15 people.
So who does? Do everybody kind of chip in or is it?
No. The girlfriend and he get stuck on duty every time.
Then just wash the dishes. I would be reasonable to not want to go to all of them. But on the big ones, just go and wash the dishes. Sometimes you got to start at the bottom of the totem pole, my friend. And you work your way up. Someone else will come along whose turn it will be to wash the dishes and then you'll get to go do something else. That's how these things work.
Mm-hmm.
So you pay your penance and you move on. It's a family tradition. Suck it up, buttercup. When you marry in, or when you know, now it's a girlfriend, not a marriage, but same kind of thing. You get all of them, not just part of them. It's, you know, that comes with their families. Now, is it reasonable to not want to go? Sure. Is it reasonable to want to skip out on some of them? Sure. You have your own family on some of these occasions to go see.
Yes, you do.
Okay. And you need to be closer. You're all over the place tonight on your mic. Just to let you know.
Okay.
All right. And so, yeah. So that's my suggestion, is just suck it up, buttercup. And you'll eventually move off the bottom of the totem pole. Someone else will come in with a new boyfriend, and then you get to go do something else. So, what will happen? All right, what's next?
I'm going to skip this next one. That should be at the end of the show. I'm going to move on to the next one. Okay. I have face blindness. My boyfriend likes to test me. How do I make it clear this is not okay? Okay, she doesn't recognize people's faces.
Uh-huh.
But she can tell by asking, she asks questions, you know, there's certain specific questions, things she remembers about people and hearing their voice.
Yeah, she's probably often recognized people mostly by their voice would be my assumption.
Yeah. But her boyfriend tests her.
Okay, well, let's be clear. She's 25, he's 24, and he's doing this because he's young and immature. And you should likely move on because you shouldn't really have to deal with that.
No.
And he will have to learn a tough lesson. But, so, I like to be generally more upbeat on answering these type of questions. But at 24, the only way he's going to learn this lesson is to lose you. Because he's just not mature enough at this stage to learn it any other way. Otherwise, he would have done it already.
That's sad. But this is really over the line.
You're talking to someone who's got four boys. Yeah. Some lessons are hard learned. And so, hey, you know, sometimes, what is it? If you love something, you have to let it go. And sometimes it can grow and come back. So it doesn't necessarily mean an end, but it is going to have to change. And it's not your duty
to force it on them, but it's also not your duty to be in a relationship that he can't understand that it's not okay. Now, part of it may be ignorance. He can't understand face blindness. He can't wrap his head around it. Right? And you hit ignorance with immaturity and you get ugliness. She shouldn't have to put up with it.
Yeah.
He should have dealt with it by now. My guess is she's already tried to explain this to him and it's not getting through.
Next.
Sadly.
Yeah.
Okay.
How can I politely decline my father-in-law's request for daily check-in?
Just don't do it.
Okay, now just to put it in context, she's 40 and he's 70.
Well, is his daily check-in, is she asking him to, hey, can you do me a favor and call me once a day to make sure I'm okay? He's a frail 70. Is that what this is? And she's asking, and because his son is not, shall we say, doesn't have the ability to remember to do these kind of things, maybe he's asking you to remind his son to make a daily check-in. So my solution would be to remind your husband to do a check-in with his father.
70 is, you know.
Well,
getting up there.
Yeah, and different 70, there's a wide variety of 70. Some 70-year-olds are as healthier than me.
Maybe he's healthy, but he's just lonely. How about that?
Yeah, this is entirely true. So you know, maybe your thing is to remind your husband to check in with his father.
Yes.
That's the solution to that one. Okay. All right.
We're going to move on to work questions.
All righty.
How do you feel about dating at work?
Well, it depends. If you're kind of the low-level employees, knock yourself out. If you're in the executive area, you probably shouldn't. And those middle managers are dangerous. The biggest thing is to never date above or below your stations. It's just bad juju. Just is. If you're going to do dating, you date for someone who's relatively equal with you on the thing. And hopefully you guys don't have really much direct working together things.
Yeah.
Projects. Yeah. If two warehouse workers want to get together and no one cares, right? If two HR people want to get together, no one really cares. But if an executive and a warehouse worker get together, there's all kinds of problems with that. You know, and executives, no, you don't date executives. You don't do it. If you really must, one of you finds a different job. If you really must. Now, there are exceptions to that that have worked, but man, that's the exception, not the rule. And most of us aren't lucky enough to expect the exceptions.
At Goodwill, the CEO married the, this is before I got there. He married the head cook in the cafeteria.
That's not a good idea.
Well, they both retired.
Well, there you go. So, you know, and again, when you're old and near in retirement, it's a different thing than you're in your 30s and climbing your career. 30s, 40s, 50s, and climbing, career climbing. So, all right, what's next?
Is wet hair unprofessional? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But it also kind of depends on the environment. Hey, everybody sometimes has, you run in late from the gym or something, and your choice is to go in there stinking or get in there with wet hair. What are you going to make? What are you going to do?
Well, yeah, you're going with the long, damp hair.
Yes. Yeah. So that's all I'm saying. So is wet hair unprofessional? Yes, but sometimes the alternative is more unprofessional. So, you know, you pick your poisons at times. You just do. Okay.
People at work whispering insults or say them under their breath. Why is that?
Well, because it would be impolite to say them louder, but yet they want to express themselves anyway. Clearly, there's some things you don't say loud enough for other people to really hear. It's not actually, oh, that one's not all that complicated, right? If you think your boss is not intelligent, you're not going to use colorful language to say that out loud, are you?
Well, no.
No, but you still want to express it. So guess what? You got to express it. Okay, what's next?
Is there a tactful way to tell the manager I don't want to work with a teammate?
No, you just tell them. You just don't do it. So I call it aggressively. You just tell them as calmly and rationally as you can. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, sadly, that's the best way to deal with some of these kind of questions. So, yeah, All right, what's next?
Any tips for someone 55 to find a job?
Yes. The question is, you're going to have to do things you don't like make multiple resumes, different resumes for different applications. Because what you're going to do is you're going to find as you go through, and the old resumes we used to make were kind of traditional. Where you put your jobs, your job titles, and whatnot. No one cares about those anymore. Nowadays, what people want is your skills-based resume, which for you is actually positive, because over your 55 years, 40 years of working or whatever it is, you have developed a lot of skills. So you create different resumes that highlight different skill sets. And you use those. Like I had a community organizer resume. I have a resume as a content producer. I have a resume for politics. For political consulting. These are all different resumes. It's the same me.
Mm-hmm.
But depending upon the job I need, or depending upon the job I'm looking for, I'm going for, I pick and choose which resume I send. I actually do one of the things job seekers tell you is to, send out a customized resume for each company. I actually don't do that. I'm not suggesting anybody should use my method, but I view these things that they're applying for me as much as I'm applying for them. When I go to an interview, they're asking me to lend them their talent, my talents, as much as I am asking them to give me a job. It's a very empowering perspective. And at 55, you have this long skill set and experience to be able to do that. Lean on your skill sets and experience. You are now in a leadership position, right? You now have leadership skills. Lean on those. You're now in the decision maker part of your job, of your career. Apply for those. Apply for the right jobs. If you're applying for a low-level job, the reason people won't hire you is because they think you're going to go somewhere else as soon as you can find it, and they're correct. You will. So apply for the jobs that you'll actually stick at, and you'll have a better chance of getting those. Hey, now, sometimes you just need money, and working at Walmart is an income, and that's fine, but Walmart understands that doesn't mind that you leave when you find a better job. It's written into their business plan. So, if you need an income, just as you're looking for a better job, you go to things that don't mind turnover. Walmart, fitness centers, those kind of things. And if you just need to have some money coming in while you're looking for your next job, you find something that they don't mind turnover. It's easier for older people to get a job, but older people, it's harder to find a job because you're looking for decision makers, and it's a different type of job than you're probably used to. Mm-hmm.
Good luck, my friend. Okay.
Why are coworkers not your friends?
Well, on occasion, coworkers will end up evolving to being a friend. But as a general rule of thumb, your coworkers are people who you just happen to spend a lot of time with, and therefore you get to know different parts of their lives. But in outside of work, you probably wouldn't have any desire to have contact with them. And just because you work well with somebody doesn't mean you want to spend time with them after that. The reality is you mostly don't, because you spend 8 hours a day with these people. Why do you want to go spend more time with them after work? But also, they all have their own. Many people have their own agendas, their own desires, their own climbing the corporate ladder, so to speak, or whatnot. And they'll step on you at the, you know, those people will step on you the first chance they get. Now, some people can become your friends, but it's not a, it's not a given, and there are few and far between. You know, your work friends are your work friends, and it's just the way it is. Yeah. All right. What's next?
Ever start a new job where the job title or duties were completely different than advertised?
Yes, but that's hard to remember when. Like, they didn't tell me when I went and was selling vacuum cleaners. It wasn't a vacuum cleaner sales job. It sounded like it was an office job, the way they had done it. That's actually the biggest one, is that jobs that are often sales jobs, you don't advertise them as sales. They advertise them as something else, and they end up being sales. Mm-hmm. Because they're kind of scammy or whatnot. And that's actually the biggest one, the biggest that I know, kind of scammy thing. Mm-hmm. Is where the job title isn't what it really is. So what about you? How many have you gone through?
What usually happens is I start out with the duties, but then over time things kept getting added and weird shit, you know. It like inspecting under trailers, you know, the big 40-foot trailers. I was supposed to look at brake lines. I have no idea to this day what a brake line looks like.
Yay, safety.
I told them I didn't know. They just said, just try.
Well, shouldn't someone have shown you? I mean, it's not one of those things that can't be trained.
Yeah, they tried to show me, but it didn't make any sense.
Okay, wait a minute.
Because there's all kinds of tubes and lines and things.
Wait, weren't you trained to arm helicopters?
That's bullets. Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying. If you're trained to arm helicopters, I'm pretty sure you could be trained to see if a brake line is leaking or not.
I wasn't trainable. Sorry. No, I'm not interested. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, well, that's the truth, right?
I had no interest in this task.
Yes, didn't want to do the task. Part of that.
It was baloney. I was an office worker, and they want me digging around under trailers. Shut up.
Okay. All right. We've got just enough time, so now we can move on to our other question. All right, so what do we got? You want to go back to that one you skipped?
Okay.
Okay. All right, we're moving on to intimate questions, shall we say?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. My boyfriend watches porn while I am doing a job. Mm-hmm. How do I approach asking him to not watch the porn while she's doing this deed?
Just ask him to turn it off. Or the problem is, here's the problem. A lot of, especially the younger people these days, they don't know how to do this without it.
Are you serious?
They've never, they haven't had stimulation outside of visuals.
What about your own head?
Guys haven't needed to use their own head since the 80s.
Women do it all the time.
You all have a different wiring than we do. We're visual creatures. So
it's about the emotions.
Okay, yes. But there's two sides of this. Just because it's about your all emotions doesn't mean it's necessarily, it's a thing. It's a very base thing for us. It's not about our emotions. It's some primal drive, especially in your 20s. These people are in their young 20s. It's a primal drive, and they're not mature enough to control it yet, or experienced enough to know how to control it yet. Is on this particular case is going to be my guess. Not experienced enough. So the solution, there's an easier solution, is do one when there's no porn on.
Yeah, don't do it if the porn's on.
Turn the TV off.
Turn it off before you start.
And, or the thing is, maybe you can, you know, work some arrangement. Maybe he likes that for some reason. It's a thing.
Oh, it's a thing with a lot of guys.
Well, it could be a thing, but then if it's a thing, then you have to make a choice. Okay, but you don't always get your thing. Sometimes I get my thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's how relationships are compromised, and you both accept parts of each other's things. You know, or you don't, and you move on to a different person and you accept their things, or you don't. You're not going to get away from having to compromise with people and their things. And so you're going to have to pick and choose which things you want to compromise on and not. Nobody else gets to make these decisions. You do. But that's it. And there may come a time in your life where, quite frankly, you appreciate the extra added stimulation. You know, it's easier in your 20s. You know, sometimes when you're a little older, you need some extra help.
Well, that's true.
Just saying. Especially if you don't want it to become a chore. So, but anyway, it's not, she's not being unreasonable. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to be clear. She's, I'm just pointing out that she's dealing with genetics and human history,
24,
and evolution and hormones and immaturity. And yeah, you're right at that point where you're going to start maturing. So this is an opportunity for maturing. How's that? Okay, so let's get down here. All right, what's next?
What is jackhammering?
I haven't got the slightest idea.
I think it's like, you know, the guy on top, and he just makes like a bunny, you know?
Did we look it up?
No. Maybe. But when they were talking about it.
All right.
Yeah, a man's rapid motion sex style.
Uh-huh. So.
Jackhammering is a style used by avid porn watchers. Oh, zero pleasure to a woman. They actually added that. That's a kudos to them. Thank you very much. We appreciate that, because there is nothing.
Oh, that's the Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, nothing from us.
Well, let's be clear. There's something for... I'll guarantee you can find women who enjoy that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, if you're into the submissive stuff.
Like I said, I'm sure that you can find women who get into that kind of thing. And so as long as
basically it's just, you know, masturbation.
I'm just saying that you can find something for everybody these days.
And now you might as well just be a blow up doll. You're not really there.
Maybe. I don't know. I had no clue what this was. So
okay.
All right.
Okay. Am I masturbating excessively? What are potential harmful health effects it could have? So he is masturbating like 4 or 5 times a day, and he's concerned. He's 19.
Well, at 19, it's, well, no, there's no like harmful side effects. Like, you're not going to hurt your liver or anything like that. You know, you're not going to get yourself testicular cancer because you play with yourself too much. That's not how that works. Psychologically, you could be setting yourself up for a difficulty later on down the line about not being able to be pleasured by anything else because you've trained yourself to only be pleasured by that. So that's a potential possibility.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's not necessarily a harmful health effect, I suppose. Mm-hmm. It kind of is, but it's also kind of not.
Well, then there's the hair that grows on your hand.
Hair does not grow on your hands. Stop it. We don't need to be starting those rumors again. That was bad enough in the 60s. So the question is it negatively impacting your life? Is it causing you to not do things that you would otherwise do? Sucking up too much time? You know, are you not going out with friends? Are you not playing a video game you'd rather play? Whatever it is. Is it negatively impacting your life? And that's always the question to ask. And my guess is if you're asking the question, it probably is. You'll probably have to kind of make a deal with yourself to start eliminating it. Now, there is another option here, is that if you're dealing with some high anxiety, it is a natural way to deal with anxiety. And so you may want to explore what your emotional state is before you go down a different road. Because you may be essentially covering for some anxiety. And so before you take off your security blanket, you may want to make sure that you're not covering something up. So how's that? Okay, what's next?
Okay, here's another one.
Uh-huh.
I want to be dominated, but I don't. Okay. She likes the outfit.
Uh-huh.
She likes the masks, especially.
Uh-huh.
And she likes to be told what to do.
Uh-huh.
But she doesn't like being hit, no spankings, you know, no paddles or anything like that. And she doesn't like being talked down to.
Okay. Well, then you just find somebody who's in your, that's not uncommon for you to only like to kind of be partially, right? Not, you don't want the whole thing. There's various levels people get off at their different off ramps. It's not unusual.
Not unusual at all.
So it's, you want the feeling of being dominated without actually wanting to have the potential pain and what's the words I'm looking for?
Well, you're not, she doesn't like the verbal put downs.
Yeah.
So there's no abuse, emotional abuse there.
Uh-huh. No, she doesn't want to have, essentially what she wants to do is light role play. And she just doesn't know it.
Oh.
She just wants to do it. She wants to be dressed up and have some light role play and then fall into regular, you know.
And then be done with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she really wants his role play.
Oh.
She likes the mask. She likes dressing up. She likes kind of pretending hee hee ha ha and get down to business and just kind of have normal business. There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
No.
It's very common, I'm sure.
Yeah. So you want, it's, and you know, maybe not, you, as you go down the road, your desires can evolve, but no. So, but my guess would be to rephrase your internal thoughts. What you want is light role play. Right? You want to be the maid.
Yeah.
You know, or something. Yeah. Oh, Mr. Milkman. You know, whatever it is. Okay, what's next? I guess these days. Oh, Mr. Uber driver. So
that's a good one.
Okay, what's next?
Hypersexuality in women. I feel out of control. Okay, she's 19. She's been to counseling. She's tried medication. She's just hyper at 19.
Well, it's hard to know because I don't want to downplay it because it could, because clearly she's disturbed by it.
Mm-hmm. And if she's, yeah.
And if she's disturbed by it, then.
Oh, it's affecting her life.
Yeah. And then that becomes the problem. Hopefully you grow out of it once your hormones calm down. My suspicion is this is a hormone issue, and which is why they put you on medication to try to moderate her hormones.
Mm-hmm.
So the only suggestion I have is keep working with your doctor. That's it. And you're going to therapy. You're doing all the right things. So just keep at it. Sometimes these things, you just have to keep chipping away before you break through.
Yeah.
We sympathize with you. Because if it gets to the point where it's driving you insane, it's got to be not a fun time. Especially at 19, because you can set yourself up now for a lifetime of misunderstanding sexual relationships out of something like this. That's the real long-term side effect, is you now have got a distorted view of sexuality because you've had this experience that's abnormal. And so when she finally calms down and gets normal, how is she going to have a normal?
Well, that's for counseling, I think. It would definitely be helpful.
And hopefully, if she gets it worked out by 21, it's not as big of a deal as if she'd had gone through most of her 20s not having it sorted out. So the hope is she gets it sorted out as quickly as possible and that long-term consequence doesn't happen. Okay, last question for the night.
IUD plus condom plus pull-out. Too much? They really are not ready for children.
Okay, so how old are they?
Well, early 20s.
No, it seems a bit excessive, but if you really don't want children, then yeah. I'm not going to judge anybody for being extra, extra careful. I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's just, they're just not, they don't feel they're financially ready. They're in college, you know?
Well, then my question is there, if that's such a big concern, there's only one way to be 100% sure.
Do other stuff.
Yeah.
Don't have intercourse.
It's, yeah. I mean, but if you really, that's about as, the only other thing you could do, I suppose, is to go on the pill too. And I'm not sure that's such a good idea with an IUD. So,
yeah.
So you've done everything you can do at this point, it's percentage wise, it's about as low as percentage as you can get.
Yeah.
But as long as you're doing it, there's always a risk.
Always.
So best of luck to you. Congratulate you on thinking this through and having an actual genuine conversation and making honest, genuine decisions about moving forward. That's great. Seriously.
There's a lot of work right there.
That's a lot of work they've put into, a lot of thought, yeah. A lot of discussions.
Yeah.
And so you guys, those are two, whether whatever happens to the relationship, they're young enough, that relationship may or may not last, but they're putting in a good base foundation for the rest of their lives. Those two are going to be, successful in what they want to do.
Yes.
Yeah. So congratulations on being mature. As we've gone through this night and we've kind of seen a lot of immaturity on this list, we end this with a bit of maturity. So with that, we want to thank you for joining us. We want to remind you can find us at latenightlove.us. You can send your questions, comments, suggestions, and all that to love@latenightlove.us. And from me and Lubby, we want to Thank you for joining with us. Have a good week. Good night. And please remember to love everybody.
Good night.